Hey, hello there, you Awakening Wonders. Thanks for joining us on this voyage towards truth and freedom. Wherever you're watching this right now, the whole show will only be available on Rumble because there's a point where the truth flows through us so fast that the only way to stop it will be to bomb that pipeline from the Lord directly to thine ears. A little bit like the Nord Stream pipeline. Who could have done it? A Pulitzer Prize winning journalist has written an account. He's perhaps the greatest investigative journalist in American history, the conspiracy theorist nut, I bet. We'll be talking about his article and these breakthroughs, and we'll be piecing together a new narrative about who blew up that Nord Stream pipeline. Also, this will only be visible on Rumble because we'll have clicked right off of YouTube, Twitter, etc. by then. We're talking about Ukrainian corruption, and one of the oligarchs who's been booted off the scene had interesting connections to a certain slovenly laptop owner. We'll also have Callie Means on the show talking to us about big food and big pharma organizing systemic biases and corruption in order to, well, get us all tubby and unwell and such like, in order to keep us on a sort of, I suppose, a conveyor belt of ill health. First, though, Ukrainian leader Zelensky, Vladimir, or as Justin Trudeau would have it, Vladimir Zelensky, is in the UK potentially getting every single fighter jet we've got to not fight in a proxy war. That was Boris Johnson that's what he wants. How can something not be a proxy war if you give someone every single one of your jets?
Yeah, well, that's the question, isn't it? It's a tricky one.
One of the ones we were asking. Rishi Sunak.
What's Boris even doing talking about it anymore?
Stop going on about this stuff, mate. He's been, like, if you don't know this, in our country, we won't let him be Prime Minister anymore because he keeps decorating his house on the sly, charging us for it, holding parties throughout the lockdown, which Rishi Sunak went to. It's extraordinary, these people. The way that they're allowed to be
charged. Yeah, it's also a bit weird that he's calling for all these Typhoon jets, which I think Zelensky's calling Wings of Freedom. Last time I understood a bit about fighter jets is they contain...
Can you give us some Wings of Freedom,
explosives. But yeah, Boris, as we know by that Israeli former Prime Minister, Naftali Bennett, the other week, about, Boris literally stopped peace talks. So it's a strange thing now that he's going... We'll, give you these jets.
He disrupted those peace talks for reasons that we cannot yet explain. Some might imagine it's because there were still profits to be extracted from the situation. There were still military-industrial complex profits to be made. There's still potential for big tech and surveillance advantages to be exacted and enacted upon a potentially 100% digital Ukraine after the war. One thing for sure is that Boris Johnson will be fuming that he ain't Prime Minister no more, because he's lost the opportunity to go on a series of peculiar PR photo ops with the Prime Minister. And now, of course, it's Rishi Sunak. He doesn't look comfortable in the role. I think he looks preppy and awkward. And I think a lot of other leaders are turned on by and intimidated by Zelensky because he's a wartime leader.
Yeah.
Like, look at, for example, Rishi Sunak here. Look at his boots. Look at them both in those sort of Star Wars type helmets that neither of them look good in. Let's look at the next image. Look at them grinning there, doing selfies and that. Like, all the while through these images, why don't you say to yourself mentally, there's a war on, there's a war on, there's a war on, there's a war on, there's a war on. Why are you grinning and enjoying yourself so much while discussing this stuff? There's a war on, there's a war on, there's a war on, there's a war on. Also, of course, Zelensky is currently afforded unique status, and I'm in no position to say that he's anything other than a heroic leader while being attacked by a foreign aggressor that's doubtlessly a much more powerful nation, although there are alternative narratives available for what exacerbated tensions between Russia and the West and the NATO infringement arguments, and we'll be talking about the Nord Stream pipeline in some detail later and how that plays into the relationships between Russia and Europe and how America have long wanted to intercede in those relationships. This is all fascinating stuff. But for now, let's just focus on Zelensky's unique positioning in the media as a solely heroic figure. This is a mainstream media article from the 3rd of October, 2021, obviously prior to the war, where Zelensky was talked of as just another Ukrainian leader. Look at this. Zelensky is rather similar to his predecessors because he had an undisclosed stake, or has previously had an undisclosed stake, in an offshore company. And when you sort of ally that with all of the oligarchs that are being booted out and sort of concealed and shut down, one of whom has some unique relationships with a certain someone whose laptops ought to get mended in private, it suggests to me that there's a degree of complexity in this case. And let me know in the chat, let me know in the stream. And if you're a member of Locals, you can talk to us directly right now. They tried to make him a messiah figure, says Morris Cat, here on Locals. Mm. You can join us there if you want to. It seems to me that what we really want, Gareth, is more honest and rigorous reporting, unbiased reporting.
Well, exactly. It's not to say that world leaders, you know, aren't corrupt in general. He's maybe not that different from anyone we could mention. We've just literally named Boris Johnson. We know all the stuff that's going on around with Joe Biden at the moment. So it's not to say that there aren't other corrupt world leaders, but it is to say that there's more complexity than someone just appearing at the Golden Globes and casting in the way that, like, Sean Penn gave him an Oscar, that he was some kind of heroic. I mean, I guess he's still heroic, but it's not as simple.
It is a unique situation when you're not an actor or anything, or even like a sound technician or a makeup artist, and you get given an Oscar for being in a war. That's unusual. That's not even what the Oscars are normally about. So it's an extraordinary presentation, and I would say an attempt to reduce the complexity of the argument to simple psychological notions, philosophical, theological ideas of good and evil, denying the complexity of this situation, a complexity that we'll be examining while looking at the Nord Stream pipeline case. We're going to be slipping off just onto Rumble in a minute, particularly when we talk about the oligarchical connection between the most powerful family. Is it the most powerful family in America? Who do you think are the most powerful family in America? Let me know in the chat. Let me know in the comments. And a corrupt Ukrainian oligarch. A lot of questions come to the forefront. There's been a new article about the Nord Stream pipeline leakages and who benefits from it. Allegations have been leveled by the US, Russia, Poland and other players in the region on who is behind the leak. Let's see if we can, like the greatest British detective in history, Sherlock Holmes, deduce who could have blown up that Nord Stream pipeline. Who had a motive? Who benefits? I understand that Russia get 45% of their annual treasury.
That would have been the case from Nord Stream 2. It was going to be extremely profitable because of the deals that they were going to do with Germany.
In a sense, Nord Stream 2 was their Avatar 2.
Right.
It was a sequel to their earlier pipeline, but it was still going to be highly profitable. So if Russia can't have blown up that pipeline because it not only was it financially necessary for them, it was also strategically necessary to maintain good relationships with Europe, who were getting their natural gas supplies from Russia, potentially for a considerable amount of time. Let's have a look at who else could have blown up that pipeline. Let's put together some clues. You up for this, Gal?
Yeah.
Play along at home. Let us know in the comments if you're over on YouTube or on Twitter who you think's blown up that pipeline. Let's have a look at our first piece of evidence. I call to the stand Joe Biden.
If Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine.
We know what invasions are at this point in history.
Thanks for explaining that, Joe.
What do you mean invade? Oh, you know, tanks, armies and that.
Trains, things like that.
We did say trains.
You did at one point.
It was trains. That's not going to happen. That's an unreliable method. What if there's no tracks?
Again, then there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
We will bring an end to Nord Stream 2. Maybe I'm going to put that in my pad.
What could he mean by that?
What does he mean, though? Don't jump to conclusions. Unless you're a conspiracy theorist, then you will jump to conclusions. I don't know what you
guys
are like.
Seymour
Hersh, one of the great Pulitzer Prize-winning conspiracy theorists. One of his conspiracy theories is that Abu Ghraib were torturing prisoners during the Iraq War. Another of his conspiracy theories is that civilians were killed during Vietnam, for which I believe that reporting was what won him that conspiracy theorist gong, the Pulitzer Prize.
They are going to have to start renaming that. Chris Hedges, now Seymour
conspiracy
Hersh.
Theorist. Greenwald, conspiracy theorist.
Blimey.
Yeah, really.
Greenwald, yeah.
They're all, they're all Pulitzer Prize winning conspiracy theorists. Okay, but like, so Joe Biden there, you saw that, didn't you? You heard it. We're not sharing in a mass delusion induced by a globalist system that wants us all dumb and distracted, are we? Hypnotized by centralist interest. We all heard Joe Biden say, we will end that Nord Stream pipeline. But that's not motive enough, or it's not certainly not evidence enough. Let's see if way back in 2014, secretaries of state were talking about the energy relationships between the United States and Europe and potential competition with Russia. Have a look.
You want to depend more on the North American energy platform, the tremendous bounty of oil and gas that we're finding in North America. You want to have pipelines that don't go through Ukraine and Russia. For years, we've tried to get the Europeans to be interested in different pipeline routes.
Different pipeline routes. Now, these are all interesting pieces of evidence. That's evidence that America had an imperative to form relationships between Europe and the States when it comes to the purchase of national energy. Joe Biden said that he will end the Nord Stream pipeline too, particularly in the event of war. But we've saved the best of the investigative journalists to last, a man who's not yet won a Pulitzer Prize, but surely if these conspiracy theories keep flowing, it's only a matter of time. This is from my interview with former Navy SEAL Jocko Willink, where I asked him outright, is it possible to blow up a pipeline under the water if you're a Navy SEAL? Have a look.
One of the things they said around the Nord Stream 2 pipeline is it wouldn't be possible that, like, America don't have the submersive capacity. In the Baltic Sea, at a level of 200 feet, purely hypothetically, would it be possible for a special forces team to undertake the sabotage of a pipeline?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, seemed almost offended by the question.
Of course he did. Jocko Willink, that great big testosterone comet, that great blazing, mighty meteorite of testosterone, was offended by the question. Here is the article that's provoked this interest by Seymour Hersh. Last June, the Navy divers, operating under the cover of a widely publicised midsummer NATO exercise known as Battletops 22, planted the remotely triggered explosives that 3 months later destroyed three of the four Nord Stream pipelines, according to a source with direct knowledge of the operational planning. Okay, what's next? Biden and Nuland's indiscretion, if that's what it was. That's, of course, a reference to both that Victoria Nuland, who's been in successive administrations, isn't she, mate? She says, oh, well, we'd do it, we'd blow it up. There's a real cool story behind this, isn't there? Would you explain it?
Which one's this one, mate?
Well, like, that if they publicly say, if Biden publicly
says, I see what you mean,
we're going to blow up that pipeline, they don't have to go via Congress for a covert operation.
That's right, yeah.
That's mental, isn't it? So it wasn't a mistake for Biden to go, yeah, we'll blow it up, and for Victoria Nuland to say, yeah, well, we'll end that pipeline, we'll kick them right up the pipeline. Mm. By doing that, that means that it has to be secret to a degree that it don't even have to get congressional support, which it normally would if it was a co-op, isn't
exactly
it?
Exactly that.
Yeah,
covert,
cool.
Yes, correct.
Covert operation. Listen, we're only going to be, if you're watching us on Twitter or YouTube, we can only stay here for another minute because we're going to do our hero presentation. Here's the news, no, here's the effing news. And in that, we dive pretty deep into Ukrainian corruption. Again, we could not be more sympathetic to the suffering of Ukrainian people. We are advocating for peace. We support the anti-war marches that are happening around the world, thankfully, right now. And anything humanitarian that can be done to aid Ukrainian people ought to be done. But if you have a sneaking suspicion that the war machine is being fed, if you think that Zelensky has been elevated to this position of prominence just because temporarily his goals and aims converge with the aims of the globalist centralist politicians like Rishi Sunak, like Joe Biden, the new establishment that want to continue to fuel the military-industrial complex, that want to participate in BlackRock's reconstruction of Ukraine, then you have to let us know in the chat and the comments, and you have to stay and watch our investigative reporting, which hasn't won a Pulitzer Prize yet, but it's only a matter... We've done it the other way around. We start as conspiracy theorists... Then we move into the Pulitzer.
Sure.
It's the old Texas switcher. It's how we do it.
The old switcheroo, isn't it?
Switcheroo. Mm. Watch out. What do we do? Switcheroo, switcheroo. So according to the source, some of the senior officials of the CIA determined that blowing up the pipeline no longer could be considered a covert option because the president just announced that we knew how to do it. So that meant, it's tactical.
Amazing.
Because there's so much potential for Joe Biden to mess that up with all of his forgetfulness. Yep. And he's like, big farmer this year and make no mistake, I'll be sugar to bitty gumbo.
Maybe he's
stuff.
Not as daft as we think he
he's
might
the
be.
The whole thing.
Right.
He's like, he's duping us.
Right.
He's like a hustler. Mm. He's like a pool hustler.
Mm.
He's pretending to be all like that. And then he gets home and he goes, now listen to me, son. Hunter, go take another laptop to Delaware. Like, and it's all, the whole thing's a master plan.
Mm.
The plan to blow up Nord Stream 2 and 1 was suddenly downgraded from a covert requiring that Congress be informed to one that was deemed as highly classified with US military support. Under the law, the source explained, is no longer a legal requirement to report to Congress. What's the next bit of information? The next bit is this.
Yep.
Is this the bit about this bit I really like? Because this contextualizes the blowing up of the Nord Stream pipeline as advantageous, not only economically, but strategically. Because if you think about this rationally for a moment, Russia is like a serious country with a real history, hundreds of millions of people. Europe and Russia have got to have a convivial, congenial relationship, whether that's based on trade, military pacts, or whatever. For all of us, for them, for us, peace has to be brought about. But the whole Nord Stream pipe stream scheme allows a number of advantages. Firstly, it's what we would call in British football a six-pointer. Money that Russia loses, revenue that Russia loses, America gains. That's fantastic. Also, it creates military disruption. Listen to this. The Nord Stream 2, whose construction was completed in September 2021, would, if approved by German regulators, double the amount of cheap gas that would be available to Germany and Western Europe. The second pipeline would also provide enough gas for more than 50% of Germany's annual consumption. As long as Europe remained dependent on the pipelines for cheap natural gas, Washington was afraid that countries like Germany would be reluctant to supply Ukraine with the money and weapons it needed to defeat Russia.
Twin agenda, really, isn't it?
Twin agenda.
Mm.
It's a twin agenda.
And I think also the United States, I think, was recently announced they have become the biggest suppliers or exporters of liquid natural gas now.
So certainly to the UK.
It has worked.
As a strategy, it's been brilliant.
Mm.
As a display of moral and ethical diplomacy, it's not been great, particularly when the whole framing of this, remember, is Russia as aggressor and Ukrainian civilians and their protection and safety as the aim and the goal. But throughout history, how many times have you seen a humanitarian disaster or crisis of some kind presented to you as something that necessarily had to be dealt with only for some of the most powerful interests in the world to benefit? So I think we have to learn to look for that template, not to become cynical and bankrupt or extremist, and certainly not to become conspiracy theorists, but we have to certainly stay aware of that possibility, to stay awake to that potential.
Stay free with Russell Brand. See it first on Rumble.
Najinte369 says, I hate to agree, but I thought when I saw Zelensky on the news this morning, he looked like he'd just stepped out of Gucci military wear. Then Halua, where are the voices of Ukrainian citizens? Yeah, where are those voices? Then some people say, I've got a lovely shirt. Some people wonder where my hat is. There's lots of inquiries.
It's a mixed bag.
It takes all sorts to make a crazy world. But one thing that we all require is sweet lady food. Without nutrition, Gareth, without healthy diets, without good information about the food we eat, we are lost. Callie Means is an activist who used to work in the food and farm industry before leaving to become a whistleblower on companies like Coca-Cola, where he actually was involved in lobbying. For example, did you know that once they blagged it so that Coca-Cola got recommended to children? Like, kids can drink Coca-Cola. It's good for you. He now highlights the ways in which big food and big pharma rig the system to maintain profits and keep us unhealthy. Your obesity is their profit. Callie, thanks for joining us, mate.
Oh, great to be here, Russell.
Now, we've just come out of a crisis where there's been some controversy around injecting children, perhaps needlessly. What is this new obesity drug, Ozempic, and what's the story behind it, and why is it dangerous, Callie?
Well, this is a scandal that I think is the biggest story in the country right now. The American Academy of Pediatrics, which is what sets the guidelines for pediatrics in this country, is actually a wholly owned subsidiary of pharma. The majority of their funding comes from pharma, but they set the agenda. And just last week, they recommended that every obese and overweight person in this country over 12 gets an obesity drug, and this is a lifetime injection. It says on the label for this drug that there are serious and unknown metabolic effects if you go off this drug. So we have seen teenagers, particularly during COVID, now 45% obese or overweight. It's obviously because of a rigged food system. Early in my career, I actually helped Coke rig the system. They pay the American Academy of Pediatrics directly. They pay the American Diabetes Association. Those associations, the medical establishment, has been silent that the fact that the cells and the metabolism of our children has been decimated by our food companies. But now that 45% of children are overweight or obese, we are getting a full court press to have this obesity drug injected into a large percentage of American teens, making them lifetime patients. What's so dangerous about this, Russell, and honestly heartbreaking, you know, having a new son, is that obesity isn't the problem. The problem is that children systematically through a rigged system are putting, you know, poisonous processed food into their system. And even if this obesity drug worked perfectly, which it doesn't and has massive side effects, if you're eating 25% less poison, you're still eating poison, you're still feeding yourselves bad things, you're still going to have a lot of diseases and not an optimal life. So once again, it's a distraction. It's a pharma distraction, making lifetime patients. And I think the most important thing here, or one of them, is that this is projected to be the most expensive drug in American history. We're on track to spend trillions on this drug. It would be much cheaper to just have healthy food for kids.
It's extraordinary. Through lobbying and through expenditure on dubious trialing methods, through controlling the stories around food, through controlling the stories of nutrition, it seems that an industry is devoted to creating new clients, new patients, new consumers for their products. Is it fair to say that the undue influence that Big Food is able to exert on organizations that research subjects like diabetes, heart conditions and heart disease, oncology and cancer, that we're simply not getting the real picture of how we ought to eat and what's healthy? And imagine if overnight processed foods were banned, annihilated, and people just ate healthy, what would the difference be to diseases like heart disease, diabetes, cancer?
Yeah, so working for Coke 10 years ago, and now I'm working to change these incentives, we had a strategy. Now, processed food companies contribute 11 times more money to nutritional research in the United States than the NIH. They're basically, processed food companies are funding research, and the direct strategy was to fund thousands and thousands of studies to complicate the issue. Still, to this day, elite research institutions are putting out studies questioning whether sugar causes obesity, right? So it's mass confusion. And then, as you mentioned, the medical system is totally silent on that, right? The medical system is not ringing an alarm bell about childhood diabetes, obesity. They're profiting from it. And I think the key thing to understand is that we siloed health in every institution, from pharma to med schools to your hospital. They make money on interventions of people that are sick. And as you said, we've siloed diseases into these things, right? We spend $250 billion on cancer. We spend over $1 trillion on diabetes care. The most prescribed drug in the country, 25% of the United States, is on a mental health medication, right? We have 40% of men over 40 in the U.S. are on a statin, right, to prevent heart disease. The problem is, Russell, all of the conditions I just mentioned are going up as we're treating them, as we're spending trillions of dollars to treat these conditions in silos. They're all getting worse. Rates of everything is going up. It's because the foundational reason for all of the diseases you mentioned, Russell, it's very simple, and we're being gaslighted. It's because of food, right? If you are metabolically healthy, if you're eating healthy food, if you're at a normal weight, you're very unlikely to die from COVID. You have almost 0% chance of getting diabetes, heart disease, even Alzheimer's, which is now called type 3 diabetes and is highly tied to metabolism. So we are ignoring the actually simple root cause. And this is by design, right? People getting sicker and sicker and us kind of confused about why that is helps the medical industry profit. And I'll just close, you know, this with this story. I was actually debating a leading Harvard doctor this week, who is a big proponent for Ozempic. There's this big push. She's saying that obesity is actually a genetic disease, not tied, quote, to food or lifestyle. They're literally arguing that at Harvard. And when pushed, she said she does not know why there's a crisis of childhood obesity, and it's, quote, complicated. This is not complicated. We are being poisoned from a rigged food system, and the medical system is profiting.
That is disgusting that the Food and Drug Administration Agency, the FDA, they regulate both Big Pharma and they regulate Big Food, and they take 45% of their funding from the pharmaceutical industry. And we can see now how what you correctly adjudicate to be a process of delicious poisoning through sugary, fatty, salty, processed foods is a win-win for them. I get the sort of symbol, the metaphor, talking to you, Callie, that the agricultural models that meant that we were able to detach ourselves from nature, plus industrialization and our corrupt systems, has meant that the food that we are fed are the most profitable foods, not the most nutritious foods. That was bad enough when it were carbohydrate-based diets, you know, peasants in whatever country eating potatoes or pasta or rice or whatever, bread, whatever's the appropriate food for peasants in that time. But right now, the appropriate food is poison. I see us as if we were latched with tubes, siphoning off our energy, pumping poisons into us, like we're like blobs of commodity now, and that when you say that our finest educational and academic institutions have been co-opted, that there is no credibility, that it is normal for a top Harvard professional to be so apparently credulous about how childhood obesity could increase when sugar and fat are increasing in diets, and when there is so much money spent on lobbying by the food industry. So, mate, what was your personal epiphany? When did you realize that you were working in a deeply corrupted industry? And what can we do now, systemically and individually?
So my sister was the pride of the family. We both went to Stanford. She was much smarter than me. She was president of her undergrad class, was top of her class at Stanford Med School, and then was an elite surgeon. And she, you know, after training for 13 years, had an out-of-body experience where she was doing her third surgery of the day, looking down at a patient, and they had inflammation. She was doing a sinusitis, cutting out their sinus. And she did not know why that person had inflammation. She was only trained in medical school how to cut that out, how to prescribe a drug. And what she realized is that Stanford Med School, Harvard Med School, all the elite med schools in the United States, 80% in total, do not teach one nutrition class to doctors. And then when you trace the money, more than 50% of medical school funding touches pharma. Doctors spend almost every moment in medical school learning pharmacology. They actually do not have any awe, as you talk about, Russell, or understanding or curiosity about the interconnectivity of our body and the miraculousness of life. They stand, you know, our medical system is incentivized to stand and wait for people to get sick. She quit and has been on a war path. Her name's Dr. Casey Means and has inspired me a lot. And then that ties recently to our beloved, our best friend, our mom, dying of pancreatic cancer. She got that diagnosis in 2021, died 13 days later, was perfectly healthy. And tying that back, pancreatic cancer is highly tied to metabolic dysfunction to food. You know, cancers, dementia, kidney disease, COVID deaths, all these things, when you trace it, are actually tied to food. So, Russell, it's really convinced me some of these personal experiences, like, you know, you did really take it to a spiritual level. Like, we are decimating our human capital. When 25% of kids now have prediabetes, diabetes is cellular dysregulation in their brains, throughout their precious bodies. You know, this is the first order issue, and I think we're really being just distracted from it, and we need to get back to just awe and curiosity about the interconnectivity of what's happening in our body. I think it's the most important issue we face in the world.
Yes, I think you're right. I think that what we require are systems that revere our nature and support our nature rather than enhance the evident corruption and mapped on systems that are built for profit. It's interesting what you say about awe and that lack of curiosity. Mm-hmm. Of course, it seems that when you have a poisoned, bewildered, distracted population, you can profit from their illness, you can profit from every aspect of their life, you profit from fattening them up, you profit from healing them. And obviously a drug where pharmaceutical companies can go to their shareholders and say, this is a drug they have to take for the rest of their lives. That's incredible. Also, it's a problem of inequality, of course, isn't it? Because now people that are affluent, and I'd have to say I include myself in this, you replicate the kind of diet that you would have if you were living naturally. Like, I recognize that I should be eating organic food. I should probably eat food that's available in the place that I'm out at in the season that I'm in. The ordinary conditions of our evolution are now a privilege because we are tied to economic systems and institutions of profit that will not afford us access to nature, even when it comes to sustenance, let alone nutrition.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a free market guy, but I think the free market's been totally rigged. And I think it's incumbent, and I think I am optimistic because we're calling this out. I do think people are waking up. I want to put one point, though, on this class issue, because I think that debate's really weaponized. You know, I've talked about this on other programs, but working for Coke, one of the first things we did is pay the NAACP and other civil rights groups. And I think that's part of the playbook. It's to racialize and make the debate a class issue. Of course, it was total gaslighting, because what was at stake here is that Coke wanted more funding to keep lower income children on Coke, which is giving them diabetes. But I really want to make this point. If you came down, you know, as an alien to Earth, to the United States, and saw what was going on, 80% of adults obese or overweight, metabolic dysfunction, 8 of the 10 top killers tied to food, you know, just getting away from our evolution, right? you'd have a clear policy recommendation. Let's really focus on food. Let's focus on teaching kids how to exercise, how to meditate, to get a control of their mind, you know, how to eat healthy. That would obviously, I mean, anyone 100% of the time would say that's the policy recommendation. That's not what we do. We wait for everyone to get sick and then drug them. And it's much more expensive. In the United States, and this is an important point going back to Ozempic, the obesity drug, because the system's so rigged, because pharma spends three times more than any other industry on lobbying, the United States is not even able to negotiate the drug price, even though they're the largest payer. So Ozempic, you know, prices don't go down when volume goes up. Prices are going up in healthcare and quality is getting worse. So Ozempic is $2,500 a year. It's not going down. There's a full court press for government subsidization, taxpayer funding. It literally, this sounds hyperbolic, but this is the case. If that is prescribed how it's projected, that will be trillions of dollars over the next 10 years. So again, when we talk about these classes, we talk about poor folks not being able to afford the food. Again, you take one fifth of the amount we're planning to spend on Ozempic, you could buy organic, pure, whole food for every obese child in this country. So I think that economic debate we really need to understand. We have a public policy that waits for people to get sick, which I think is evil.
I think you're right. It seems it should be the path of least resistance, the most obvious, evident, and natural solutions. Exercise, right. Eat well, make food affordable for people, create different types of agriculture, take all, where possible, like, you know, I've been thinking increasingly the fact that the medical industry is so heavily undergirded by the pursuit of profit denies and defies the possibility of even science. Science is a subset of profit. When you talk about the ability of Coca-Cola to influence the Diabetic Association and the Pediatric Association, where's follow the science then? How are we meant to regard the last couple of years if this is the true nature of science?
But like, the what you were just saying about exercise and healthy living, that message wasn't even pushed during the pandemic.
No.
That wasn't even pushed at a time when it was going to save lives through this pandemic, where COVID was apparently going to kill everyone. How is it going to be pushed in normal everyday life outside of a pandemic?
At best, it's a myopia and ineptitude, and at worst, it's a conspiracy to keep people unhealthy, dumb, and addicted.
Yeah. I mean, being in the room, I can say that, you know, there are some evil people, but I think most people, you know, they can go to sleep at night, right? They're trying to get kids cheap calories. They're developing, you know, drugs. They're treating patients. The beauty of the system, in a way, is that everyone has plausible deniability, but nobody's taking responsibility for the fact that everyone is getting sick. I mean, you make an interesting point, Russell. You know, we're being the patients in this country, both with COVID and really just the chronic disease crisis in general, which I link COVID to, you know, metabolic conditions, people dying from. They're being battered over the head to trust the science. They're being battered over the head to trust the experts. They're being battered over the head, you know, to not ask questions in the face of violence happening over the past 50 years. You know, what's happened in the past 50 years is we're getting sicker, fatter, more depressed, more infertile. You know, male sperm count's down 50%. Female infertility is skyrocketing. 25% of women have PCOS, diabetes, all these other conditions, autoimmune conditions, allergies. It's all happening, Russell, at the same time. And we're being told to trust the science. We're the only animal, Russell, humans, that have chronic obesity, that have chronic diabetes. We're born with an innate understanding of what's right for our body. A child born, you know, goes to natural food, right? Goes to want to be outside in the sun, right? We totally rob systematically people of that awe and that innate ability to know what's best for us. And I think it's one of the biggest problems in the world.
Kali, thank you very much for describing the breadth, depth, and extent of this problem. When you hear that sperm counts are doubling, we, Gareth, are going to have to work twice as hard. It's dropped by 50%. We're going to have to up our sperm manufacturing. We're going to take it to the next level. Kali, there's so much to talk about with you. We'd love to have you come back on the show and do an entire episode with us. And I'd love to invite you in mid-July to join us for community. I'd love for you to come and lecture. We do a live event with Vandana Shiva, Wim Hof, where we talk about different systems of health, different systems of politics, different systems of self-government, and indeed democracy, awareness and awakeness. You can attend that ceremony. Wow.
It'll be a ceremony.
It's happening live.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, that was Freudian. You can join us at that new cathedral cult. I mean, festival. I'd love you to come and lecture there, and your sister as well. So we'll talk offline, mate. Thank you. You can find more out about Kali at truemed.com. Follow him on Twitter, @Kali. Ali means. We'll be talking to him further. He's absolutely fantastic. Please join me tomorrow, not for more of the same, oh no, but for more of the different. Until then, stay free. Many switch in, switch on, switch off. Many switch in, switch on, switch off.